Meanwhile, in the NFL, that bad man Aaron Rodgers did not consider opting out and is only focused on this season. Here's what he had to say in a conference call on Monday about his future.
I think that if I retire on the team's, you know, timeline, then all is well. But if they're looking to move on before I'm ready to be done playing, you know, then there comes an impasse at that point. I can control, you know, my play and my performance and my approach and my leadership. But at some point, you know, there's other factors involved.
Tim Hasselbeck back here with us. Stephen A., your boy seemed really enthusiastic during that interview. Tell me this. Is Aaron Rodgers still a top three quarterback in the NFL?
Well, first of all, there's a various ways to be enthusiastic. You can be enthusiastic and suave and cool all at the same time. Mm. And that is what I saw from my man Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, that's what that was?
Bad man.
Oh,
okay. But that was smooth and suave. That's all it was. Okay. That's all it was.
Oh,
but
got
in
it.
The end, here's
got
what it.
It
comes down to. Here's what it comes down to. Despite the fact that he's a bad man, I'm going to be objective here and say the answer to that question, Molly, is no. For three simple reasons. Patrick Mahomes, Russell Wilson, and Drew Brees. Drew Brees played about five less games, still threw more touchdown passes, and completed 74% of his passes. We know what Russell Wilson has had to do and the multidimensional quarterback that he is. Never had a losing season in his entire NFL quarterbacking career. And Patrick Mahomes is just that dude, validated by his new contract. So by virtue of that reality alone, I wouldn't say that Aaron Rodgers is top three. I think he can be again. I don't think there's any question about it. I don't think he has a couple of years left in him. I think he has several years left in him. If the Green Bay Packers would just wake the hell up, recognize the greatness that they have at their disposal, and go about the business of buffering him and augmenting the talent on that roster, maybe, just maybe, you would see more greatness from Aaron Rodgers. And oh, by the way, y'all, had a bad year last year. 4,000 yards passing, 26 touchdowns, just 4 interceptions, complete 62% of his passes. To show the greatness of Aaron Rodgers, that qualifies as a bad year. To his standards, he's a bad man, make no mistake about it. It's just that based off of last season alone, last couple of seasons, I think what we've seen from Mahomes, Drew Brees, and Russell Wilson, you can't put him in top three over those guys. Mahomes is a special case because he's just an electrifying talent. But Drew Brees and Russell Wilson have resumes comparable to Aaron Rodgers that when they look the way that they have looked over the last couple of years, at least for the moment, you have to give them the edge, knowing that Aaron Rodgers could usurp them with a great season because he's that special.
I don't know if I can prove it or not, but I would take Aaron Rodgers second overall. There's Patrick Mahomes and there's everyone else. But the first guy among everyone else I'd take is Aaron Rodgers. And I thought you were going to go with Lamar Jackson, Stephen A., because he didn't play poorly in the playoff loss, but he still has yet to win a playoff game. If I'm trying to win a Super Bowl to start a season and I'm starting with no team, I could just pick my quarterback. It's Mahomes 1, it's Rodgers 2. And Mahomes basically reminds me of Rodgers in Rodgers' prime, maybe even a little better. But Rodgers was unbelievably great. And even if he's declining, he's still better, I think, than everyone else. If you gave him Drew Brees' coach and weapons and put him in a dome, I'm quite sure his numbers would be off the charts. As it was, he led the league in interception percentage, the lowest one. As you mentioned, 26 touchdowns against only 4 interceptions. And by the way, not only won 13 regular season games, beat Seattle in the playoffs, and then eventually lost to a great Niners team. I don't think he's enthusiastic. I think he's angry. I think he has a right to be. First year with a head coach, they say, hey, rely on everyone else more. And so he does, and he does it effectively, and they win a lot. And then they win a playoff game, and now he's criticized for being in decline. Then the next thing that happens is they draft his replacement instead of getting him help at a skills position, as usual, by the way. And I don't want to overstate, oh, the Packers have surrounded him with bad teams. No, they haven't. But without Aaron Rodgers, they're kind of middle-of-the-pack teams. You add Aaron Rodgers to those teams, that's why they're on the outskirts of the Super Bowl favorites every year, because everyone knows, oh, my God, they got Aaron Rodgers. I would take Mahomes first and Rodgers second. Now, you can make a really good case you should take Russell Wilson second. In fact, I think you could probably marshal better evidence to support your claim. But if I'm just talking about me. If it's me, I'm taking after Mahomes, Rodgers before anyone else. I think his talents are pitched higher. I think he's doing his best to fit into a new system that makes him look not quite as good, and yet he's doing it really well. I think he's going to get even better at it. I think he's top three. In fact, I think he's top two.
Well, I would say this. If you give me an opportunity to choose a quarterback to play a season, there's no way Aaron Rodgers doesn't show up in my top three. And so, you know, Max, you alluded to maybe having Russell Wilson at two, and that's my list. I would go Mahomes, Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. The reality is you know, everyone keeps pointing out the 26 touchdowns and four picks a year ago. And yes, that offense is changing. It was also a brand new offense a year ago. And so when you look at what Breeze is involved in New Orleans, it's a much different scenario. And by the way, if Aaron Rodgers were the quarterback down in New Orleans, I don't think we'd be seeing nearly as much Taysom Hill as we're seeing in that offense. I just don't believe we would. The consistency of Aaron Rodgers over the last four, when you put it this way, not just looking at last season alone, because if we did that, then how do you leave out someone like Lamar Jackson? He's had 107 touchdowns and 19 picks over the last four seasons. That is a guy who is aggressive with the football and throws touchdown passes, but doesn't turn it over. Like, that's exactly what you're looking for. That's why we like Patrick Mahomes. It's one of the reasons we love Russell Wilson. That's exactly what Aaron Rodgers does. And to me, I think he's going to continue to play at a high level. He's top three for me. And then I would also say this, is, you know, it's because his name has come up a few times, is Lamar Jackson. And what he did a year ago is spectacular. But I think we all kind of have to admit, when we look at style of play, when you look at the guys that have ended up in our top three, and so it's Mahomes, Wilson, Rodgers, and Breeze, the style of play is obviously coming into play when we make our top three list when we look at these quarterbacks.
Well, listen, let me respond to that, Tim, by saying this to you. I can respect where you're coming from, but I do think that there comes a point in time with certain guys, resumes do matter. Like, for example, Lamar Jackson is improving. Number one, win a playoff game. You got to do that. And number two, show and prove that you can do it consistently throwing the football, because in the playoffs, that's what's going to be required of you. Is the reason why he's been so successful during the regular season, but come playoff time, you know, obviously it's a bit problematic, first against the Chargers and then against the Titans. Secondly, we look at Drew Brees. Drew Brees has been in the NFL for 19 years, guys. Let me tell you this right now. Drew Brees, who is age 40, let me just throw down the completion percentages. Since 2013, 68.6, 69.2, 68.3, 70, 72, 74.4, 74.3. I understand Sean Payton's your coach. I understand that Michael Thomas is your wideout. I understand we've seen, you know, sporadic appearances from Taysom Hill. But we can't take away from what we see here from Drew Brees. And that's not to say he's better than Aaron Rodgers, meaning that Aaron Rodgers can't go out there if he had the right support with him, okay? If Matt LaFleur coached like Sean Payton, if the organization gave him what he needed, etc., that Aaron Rodgers can't do that. So I understand that. I'm the one that said he's a bad man. I got nothing but love for him. I'm just saying that I can't ignore what I'm seeing from a 40-year-old Drew Brees who's doing the same thing at 40, that he did at 38, that he did at 36, that he did at 34. This dude is something special. I don't think we can ignore that.
Stephen A., would Teddy Bridgewater have ripped off five wins in Green Bay?
No.
All right, I didn't think so.
I understand that.
All right, I'll leave you guys with this.
Their defense wanted for them, too. He didn't do a lot offensively.
Yeah.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C.
Tennessee, Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Max, don't get too excited all at once. It's the video you've been waiting for. The first look at Tommy Brady working out with his new teammates in Tampa.
Well, there he is,
one of Brady's new division rivals. Your guy isn't scared by the new look Bucks. Here's what Saints defensive end Cam Jordan had to say yesterday on NFL Network. Quote, they've got the second greatest quarterback of all time right behind Drew Brees. And now we've got a head-to-head 2 times a year. We got our work cut out for us, and then they have an addition. You bring in Rob Gronkowski and LeSean McCoy. You already have 2 1,000-yard receivers and Chris Godwin and Mike Evans. This is a team fighting for second place. I love some good trash talk. Gets me excited about this season. That hopefully will happen. Tim Hasselbeck back here with us. Max, who has the scarier offense? Is it the Bucs or the Saints?
It's actually the Saints. Let's start with continuity. They are in the same system with the same coach, with the same quarterback, same receivers they've always had, except they actually added the one thing the offense has been missing in recent years, which is a bona fide number two receiver, which they have now in Emmanuel Sanders to go with Michael Thomas. Obviously, Kamara is excellent. And Drew Brees, look, yes, his arm is not as strong as it used to be. He's older. But he seems to be as accurate as ever. And that was really Drew Brees' calling card, his accuracy, especially in the, you know, at home in the dome. So you have a super accurate quarterback still with an improved offensive weapons because they've maintained what they had and just added the one piece you maybe could complain about if you were nitpicking. I would say it's Drew Brees. When you look at the Bucs, they capture your imagination. Like, wow, they really have all this upside. But Tom Brady, look, he can come through when it matters most, especially over the second half of his career. He's shown not just him on a great team with a great coach who can do that. He really elevated in pressure situations consistently, except not last year as much. You know, Tom Brady, was he known more for accuracy? No, not like accurate like Drew Brees, but a strong-arm quarterback who's not as strong-armed as he used to be. Yes, he can still gun it. He's shown 61 miles an hour and all that stuff on the radar gun responding to me, apparently. But what happens when guys get older? They still have the fastball, but they're muscling it more. They can't put it where they want it as much. And so it's not just receivers that he's unfamiliar with. He missed guys every which way, short, long, left, right. You know, it happened throughout the season. And when he needed to be at his best most in that last game against Miami and again in the playoffs, he failed to do what he's always done. And yes, partly it's his situation, no doubt, and partly it's age. I think Drew Brees has retained more of what made him Drew Brees than Tom Brady has. Plus, he is actually in the better situation when you look at it carefully. I like the Saints.
Listen, I got nothing but respect for the Saints and what they put together, but I'm rolling with Tampa Bay being a more explosive offense. I think they're hungry, and I think that they're new. And the reason why I bring that up is because I think that at some point in time, when we watched New Orleans, we sort of felt like they've missed their opportunities. Obviously, that miracle in Minneapolis when the Minnesota Vikings beat them in the divisional playoff game on that pass that New Orleans forgot to defend with Stephon Diggs ending up going into the end zone before they got slammed in the NFC Championship game against the Philadelphia Eagles. That was 1 year. And then obviously they came back and then they lost to the Los Angeles Rams because of a pass in the – you know, because of a – you know, I would say rough – you know, when you hit him before the ball even came to the receiver, obviously you've got that going on, and so they missed an opportunity there. But you did find yourself looking at New Orleans. Over the last 3 years, they've had their chances. Michael Thomas was great. Drew Brees was great. Alvin Kamara was great. You got Jared Cook there now. You got acquired Emmanuel Sanders, who hasn't had a 1,000-yard season since, I think, like 2016. So we got, even though he could still play. So we've got that to take into consideration, whereas I look at Tampa Bay, and there's nothing, I mean, you got to learn as you go along if you're going up against them. to have to sit up there and have O.J. Howard with Gronk, with Cameron Brate. That's three tight ends. So you talk about using two dual tight ends anytime you want to. Not only did you have Ronald Jones, who's a decent running back, but now you've acquired Shady McCoy. Obviously, you got Godwin and Mike Evans as your wideouts. I look at Tampa Bay right now, and they are just loaded with weapons all over the place on the offensive side of the ball. Byron Leftwich is an offensive coordinator that warrants consideration for head coaching possibilities. We all know what Bruce Arians can bring to the table and how respected he is as a head coach. I'm just of the mindset that the newness of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, combined with the talent that they have, make them more formidable, even though the chemistry exists with the New Orleans Saints, and you can lean on that. Somewhere along the way, we just got the impression their time arrived, and over the course of three consecutive postseasons, they didn't capitalize on it as much as they should have, even though for the most part, it was through little fault of their own. In the end, their opportunity has come and gone, in my estimation. I would say that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers will be the more explosive offense.
Wow. This one really isn't even that close for me. I think the continuity that exists in New Orleans basically is going to have the Saints offense just so far, so much further advanced in terms of what they'll be able to do coming into this season. Basically, graduate for the Saints versus football 101 when you're talking about the Buccaneers. I mean, and then you just look at, you kind of do a tail of the tape, if you will, in terms of looking at these, segments of these teams. Let's say it's a push at quarterback. I think you could probably make an argument either way. I think the Bucs have a better tight end situation. But beyond that, I'm favoring the Saints in every other segment. I'm favoring them at running back for sure. I'm most likely favoring them at wide receiver because of how good Michael Thomas is. Their offensive line, I believe, is significantly better than the offensive line, especially the tackle positions, if you're the New Orleans Saints. I think the coach and play caller is better. And, there's that X factor in terms of trying to defend them with Taysom Hill. Especially at the beginning part of the season, but I truly believe throughout the entire season, to me, the Saints are significantly superior and probably more of a challenge to defend.
Real quick, Stephen A., I'm so glad Tim brought that up. Taysom Hill, and I've had a lot of arguments with football people over the last couple of years, and they've come around on this because I was hearing a lot of like, well, he's a gadget guy. Well, it's quite a gadget. This dude can do everything. He does it intensely, and he does it at a high level. You have Taysom Hill on the field, you can play him at quarterback, running back, fullback. He could be a wideout. You can line him up just about anywhere, and he runs almost a 4.440. I think a 4.440. He's lightning fast. He can catch. He can, like Taysom Hill. I mentioned all these players on offense and didn't even mention him. But that is a valuable piece. And they've integrated this. Like, the only real new piece on offense they have to integrate is the number two receiver they've needed. And they have him now. And he's really good.
Well, for me personally, I think the strongest argument in favor of the New Orleans Saints is the continuity. The fact that particularly during this time of a global pandemic where so much has been compromised because of the pandemic, the fact that you, by and large, have a roster that has gelled with one another and you've added Emmanuel Sanders to that equation, I think that's a tremendous argument in their favor. I'll concede that. I'll certainly concede that they've got an advantage at the running back spot with Alvin Kamara. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But as great as Michael Thomas is, and as much as I respect Emmanuel Sanders, I'd put Mike Evans and Chris Godwin up there to go against them. I'd like to see how that pans out. From the tight end spot, the fact that you have not just two, but three tight ends, you can utilize one of them at a time, two of them at a time, damn it, all three of them at a time. I think that buffers the level of production that you could ultimately get from Tom Brady, because when Tom Brady has been at his most effective is when he's had a tight end or a slot receiver that he could rely upon. And the fact that you got Howard, Gronk, and Cameron Brate to rely upon, I think, is a huge, huge plus for Tom Brady. So I think all of those things come taken into consideration, combined with we're accustomed to seeing what New Orleans throws at you on a week-in, week-out basis, because we've seen it over the course of many years. Yes, Emmanuel Sanders does add a different dimension because, again, you've got to defend him, which could free things up for a Cook, or it could free things up for a Michael Thomas. But in the end, if you're Drew Brees and you're accustomed to relying on the best receiver in football, if you are a defense, you might prepare to go up against that.
you don't know what to defend against Tampa Bay. So we'll see.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Despite a not-so-great fourth quarter, the Sixers pulled off the win last night against the Spurs with a go-ahead three-pointer by Shake Milton for a 132-130 win. The Sixers had to fight back after losing a 14-point lead in the fourth. Coach Brett Brown had this to say about his team after the game. Take a listen.
I think it stinks. I think it's not anything that we are or believe in or talk about. We were very lucky to win tonight. You know, in two closeout periods against Indiana, it was 46. Tonight it was 43. That is not going to get anything of any importance done. The good news, it is well within our reach immediately to, like, flip the switch.
All right, the Sixers struggling to close out there in the fourth. And look who's here, Jackie Mack. Always good to see you joining the debate. And Jackie, we'll get to you in just a minute. But I'm going to start with Stephen A. on this one because, you know, spent a lot of time in Philly. Stephen A., tell me this. Are you concerned about the Sixers here?
Well, I'm very concerned because there's always something wrong with the Philadelphia 76ers. One minute it's Joel Embiid shooting jump shots, not attacking the basket, or we're questioning his motor. Another minute it's not only Ben Simmons refusing to shoot three-pointers, but it's going against the wishes of his coach, who said in the offseason that that was something that was going to change because he needed more of a perimeter threat. Then we go through the season and we expected big things from them, but they were struggling to be a top four, top five seed. Then they get this 4.5-month break because of the pandemic. They come back out, and in these first few games, particularly the last two, they give up 46 points in the fourth quarter against Indiana. They give up 43, against San Antonio. And oh, by the way, in that game against Indiana, some dude named T.J. Warren, we couldn't tell the difference whether it was him or it was James Harden that was scorching the Philadelphia 76ers. The brother dropped 53 points, 19 of them coming in the fourth quarter. Oh, by the way, in these fourth quarters, the Sixers have surrendered 75% shooting from the field and 69% shooting from three-point range. These are deplorable defensive statistics, and when you're playing in a division or in a conference that has Milwaukee led by the Greek Freak but surrounded by dudes who can shoot the basketball, Toronto and Van Vliet and Lowry and others who can shoot, and an emerging star in Pascal Siakam who can play, and oh, by the way, they have the experience of being the reigning defending champions, who, by the way, went through the Sixers in order to do it. Then you've got a team like Boston with Jason Tatum having ascended. Kemba Walker, we're hoping, will get better. Oh, by the way, Jaylen Brown can ball significantly well, by the way, especially when you watched him shoot the basketball the other night. These are the kind of things that we have to pay attention to when we're looking at the Sixers in the Eastern Conference. So they need to be concerned, but it's not just because of these last two games in the fourth quarter. It's because they're one of those teams where there always seems to be something. We've got a question about one star. We've got a question about another star. We got a question about a $100 million dude in Al Horford that they brought, but they now have coming off the bench because they weren't effective enough with him in the starting lineup. You got a guy in Shake Milton who, by the way, saved the day yesterday because he hit that three, with about 7 seconds left. And, of course, there's always questions as to whether or not the coach, Brett Brown, really, really has their ear. We know he knows what he's doing. We know that he can coach in terms of X's and O's, but can he get the pulse of his players to get them to do what he needs them to do? All of these huge question marks are the kind of things you can't afford if you're the 76ers and you're trying to take advantage of this opportunity and win a championship.
I am concerned about the Sixers, and I'll just make it simple. They don't shoot it well enough. Like, that was the concern going into the season. You gave up a lot of shooting, but they got back. Richardson's the kind of guy, like, if he's shooting it well that year, he'll shoot it just well enough that you have some shooting there for from a guy who can play defense. But Ben Simmons doesn't even shoot the ball at all. It's not that he can't shoot, he just won't even shoot it at all. And then, so who else do you have? Embiid has never been a good enough three-point shooter to really have him taking a lot of three-point shots. Shake is a nice player. I mean, he showed a lot of fortitude. He had a terrible game, then he bounced back and hit a game winner. Good for him, and he has shot the three well, but he's not like a totally high usage kind of player. You're going to run your offense through. The guy who can shoot it is Tobias Harris, who's a very good offensive player, but only a good shooter. He's not a great shooter. He's a good shooter, and that's the best guy they got. They just, in the modern NBA, you have to shoot it better than the Sixers to win, most likely. Now, it's not that it's impossible to, I don't think. As long as guys are taking threes and Richardson's hitting them at a decent enough pace and Shake is and Tobias Harris is, because of the how high the talents are pitched of Ben Simmons and Embiid. Their talents are pitched so high that given the rest of the stuff, you know, maybe they could do it if they're coached up just right. They finally figured out that Horford simply can't play with Embiid and they have that figured out. But Stephen A., I will give you credit on this one. You have been the one questioning Brett Brown as a coach and saying that you don't know if he has the kind of level to get this thing done. And it's not, and I think he's a good coach, but it's going to take a great coach to win the way this team is constructed. Someone's got to, like a couple guys are going to have to start shooting it better.
He's a good coach and he's a good man, but can he get the pulse of the pulse?
Okay.
That's what I want to know.
So I know my role here, guys. My role is just to calm everybody down. It's only been two games in the bubble. Let's all get off the Sixers' back. But you know what? Can't do it for you. I'm really concerned about the Sixers. And it's because one thing, Max, that you could always count on the Sixers to do, even when all this mental gymnastics was going on, and it is always going on, they always defended. And now, in the first two games back, they've given up 127 points, 130 points. That's a problem. That's a problem that didn't exist before the pandemic hit. Now, during that time off, everybody was clamoring for Brett Brown to make a decision to do something different. He did. He moved Ben Simmons to power forward, Shake Milton to the point guard. We all applauded it. It was going to be beautiful. It was going to work. Well, Ben Simmons is struggling. Josh Richardson has all but disappeared, and he's a very important player for them. And Shake Milton did hit that big shot, and that was great to see, but struggled mightily in the first game and still defensively is still growing on the job. So concern, you bet. Here's the thing about the Sixers. Every time I look at them, I think they have two generational players. I'm not saying anything new here. Embiid, Ben Simmons, I think exceptional, rare talents with rare skill sets. And yet, you look at them, the body language is bad. This is a team that, for whatever reason, it doesn't fit. And I don't think a whole bunch of months off has made them fit any better.
You know, Jackie, and I'm really interested in getting your perspective on this, because you'll know this, being the exceptional NBA reporter that you've been for so many years. If you remember the Miami Heat during the regular season, months before the pandemic kicked in, blew the Philadelphia 76ers out in Miami. And there was noise after that game that the entire team got on a flight and returned, but Ben Simmons had stayed on because, you know, he had, you know, his, you know, personal situations. I'm not talking about anything negative or catastrophic. I'm just saying he had stayed behind. And people were pointing the finger at him at that particular moment in time, because it's like when you just got blown out, it ain't about leisure at that particular moment in time. You get on the team, on the plane with the rest of your teammates. That's a small thing. But it's emblematic of the kind of things that have taken place as we talk about Brett Brown. Because what I've religiously pointed out is that no one's ever questioned his knowledge of the game of basketball, his X's and O's, even though there were some questionable decisions I thought he made a couple of years ago in the postseason when he was going up against Brad Stevens and the Boston Celtics. But in the end, what it comes down to is that when you look at the Sixers right now, I told them this. Remember, at home, they were nearly unbeatable. On the road, they struggled to win. They were like 10-24 on the road. As a guy that reported for the Philadelphia Inquirer for 17 years, I've watched this team, and I know how they feed off that crowd at the Wells Fargo Center. And devoid of that, something is missing. When they are away from the Wells Fargo Center and that crowd imploring them to defend,
something goes missing. I don't know what it is, but in this instance, it's showing up on the defensive end of the floor, and I don't know if they can fix it in time. Your thoughts?
I agree with you. You know what's missing? I'll tell you what's missing. Jimmy Butler is what's missing. Go back to the Sixers last year when they're in the postseason and they're 1, 4, 5, and 6 bounce of a Kawhi Leonard jump shot from maybe moving on. And Jimmy Butler in those games, if you remember, guys, first of all, we know how tenacious he is defensively. But second of all, he was their closer. He was closing out those games offensively for them. He was so important to them. And look, he didn't want to stay there. He'll tell us all someday. I think we've all heard little inklings of why. But he's what's missing. If you want to talk about last year to this year and what the difference is, I think it's that.
Well, it's also the fact that he had on Joel Embiid, because Joel Embiid, Max, loved Jimmy Butler. And Jimmy Butler loved him back. The fact that he could get to Joel Embiid, and he had the pulse of Embiid and several other players, buffers Jackie's point.
One thing I would say about a lack of shooting, though, you know how we'll talk about chemistry issues on a team, and this goes across sports, but if they're winning, it's the Bronx Zoo, you know, it's a rambunctious lot, but, you know, they were, and if they're losing, it's because the chemistry wasn't right and it's sinking everything. I think shooting or a lack of shooting can have really is like, it's like an analogy for it. If you have the shooters, all these chemistry issues, they don't have Butler, they're not defending at the end of games, they're different home and road, Horford can't play with Embiid, this, that. If you have guys who can knock down shots from the outside, we're not talking about that because they're winning because they are so talented. They just don't have enough shooting. And so we start to look, well, this is going wrong, and they don't have a Butler to finish games or to set the tone or to keep Embiid on the right track or whatever. Or, you know, and Simmons won't shoot the ball. And it's not that any of those things aren't true. It's that if they had 2 or 3 knockdown shooters on the squad, we wouldn't be talking about it because they'd be winning.
No question.
No, and guys, I think that's fair.
Oh, go ahead,
Jackie. Also, they missed J.J. Redick. Oh, I was going to say, of course, you're right, Max. Remember, too, that they're missing J.J. Redick as well. But I will tell you this. You talk about chemistry and then how shooting can cure that. Tell that to the Boston Celtics last year, who had a bunch of shooters, and it didn't matter. They didn't have pieces that fit, and they didn't have the chemistry that allowed them to win. And the Sixers remind me of that.
I hated
the Celtics team last year.
That's an excellent point.
I thought Redick's transition defense was the problem on a previous Sixers team not long ago, but I'll take that transition D to get those 3-point shots falling on this Sixers team.
Ultimately, we're going to be saying management cost them a title.
Fair
because
enough.
Ownership didn't want to pay both Butler and J.J. Redick, and it might end up costing them big time for years to come.
Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Tony Brown's got 9 lives. Pete Carroll said it's a complex situation and the Seahawks are open to the possibility of signing AB depending on how things fit. Here's the deal. The NFL has suspended AB for the first 8 games of the season. The punishment stems from an allegation of sexual assault by an artist at his home in 2017 and his January arrest over an altercation with a moving truck company. Brown last played for the Patriots in September of 2019, but was released 1 week later. Baltimore Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson last week said he wants his team to sign the free agent receiver. Of course, he's arguably the most talented there is. Jeff Saturday joining us now. Jeff, great to have you with us here. We'll get to you in just a moment, but Max, you're up here first. Tell me this. Is AB a better fit in Baltimore or you think in Seattle?
Oof, that's a really good question, Molly, and I think it's close, but I think the answer is actually Seattle. Because in Baltimore, while you have a real leader in Lamar Jackson and a great coach, he's not a veteran quarterback, really. In Seattle, not only do you have the great coach and great quarterback, but they're both veteran. They both have their bona fides in the league. And I think the Ravens need AB a little more. I think he'd improve the passing game and be a weapon unlike they have and they could really use. And so you would think, well, okay, they need him more. They're more inclined to get along. But that gives AB more leverage, I think, actually, in Baltimore. In Seattle, where they have Metcalf and others who can be special, AB is going to have to fit in. So you have the veteran leadership at quarterback, at head coach. You have good options and a well-balanced offense and good options at receiver where AB doesn't have too much leverage on the team because based on his entire history, he's going to act out. How is that going to be handled? You don't want AB with too much leverage, and you want, when those outbursts come, a team-friendly, a player-friendly coach, yes, that would probably be good, as I think you have in Baltimore and especially in Seattle. But you also want them in a situation where he can't upset the whole apple cart when he starts to throw his tantrums and or whatever it is that AB is going to inevitably do. And I like the situation in Seattle better for that.
You know, it's interesting when Molly opened it up, you said that Lamar Jackson wanted Antonio Brown, wanted to sign him. I don't think there's going to be any mm-hmm. difference in Russell Wilson. He wants to sign Antonio Brown as well, right? Because they know the value of what this guy does to a football team if all the off-field situations are handled, right? So, but as I flipped the question, I was thinking about it. I think Seattle actually needs Antonio Brown more than Baltimore would need him. And Max made some really good points, but when you think about Seattle, you trade for Jamal Adams because you want to make a splash and kind of get over the hump of being a true Super Bowl contender. I think with Antonio Brown on that offense, now you really do push yourself in the argument. I think Russell Wilson needs an Antonio Brown. I know they have Metcalf, they have Lockett, but Antonio Brown and what he could bring to that offense, whether it's his route running, whether it's separation, whether it's flipping the field, scoring big, long touchdowns, all the different things that AB could do for you. Lamar Jackson and that Baltimore offense, even though he could help that offense, they don't need him as much. Seattle needs this style of player to improve their offense. I think they're in the top 10 in offense, maybe 9-10, somewhere in there. You saw what Baltimore did last year and kind of what happened with Lamar. I would say from the Seahawks perspective, why is Pete Carroll as open as he is, whether it be Josh Gordon or Antonio Brown? Because he understands in that offense, they have laid so much on Russell Wilson the past few years that they keep asking him to do miracles in the fourth quarter. He needs some other guys around him to kind of be miracle workers, right? And that's what you're trying to bring in with an Antonio Bryant, with a Josh Gordon, is big plays, flipping, you know, shortening drives, making those kind of impact plays and catches. The only issue for Antonio Brown is he can't keep out of the news off the field. And I do think Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks would probably be a better fit from that perspective as well, because Max laid out a ton of great points, right? You have Russell Wilson, you have Pete Carroll, you have veterans on the defensive side of the ball who understand, and now you just brought in Jamal Adams, who will be another leader on that football team. So you have that locker room I wouldn't say tremendously, but I would say it is a more solid group of veterans in that locker room that could withstand distraction. And if they had to hone it in or pull it back or release somebody, they could transition with that, as opposed to it may upset the Baltimore football team a little bit more.
I think they do have a difference maker at receiver in Metcalf. You know, no disrespect to Lockett, who's excellent. Metcalf is a first-year player. Rookie is already like, whoa.
For sure.
The people like Molly who were like, draft Metcalf, turned out to be right, I think. Because there were also others who said, yeah, he looks the part, but what about the numbers in college and all that stuff? Maybe he just looks the part and he's from Central Casting, although as like this new receiver that we've never seen before, that kind of physicality, for lack of a better word. But those like Molly were like, no, Metcalf is different. I think we're right. I think they have that difference maker, and I expect him to make real improvements in his second season. But I think they could withstand Antonio Brown's antics better. But in fact, the greater need, Jeff, I think one of the reasons Baltimore need, like, one of the things they could use to get over the hump in the playoffs is someone that Lamar Jackson can throw the ball to under pressure, who can make something out of nothing, who can be special in those moments and help Lamar Jackson's development as a passer in those situations, because he wants to get to where Russell Wilson is now in that respect. I think AB could help him get there on the field. Off the field, I think Seattle's better off, we're better equipped to handle him.
Stephen A., where are you on this? So you just heard the end of Max there, and Jeff Saturday also thought Seattle was the better fit just based on the veteran leadership to kind of keep AB in line, you know, with the off-the-field stuff, having Russell Wilson, having Pete Carroll, and the players on defense. What do you think's the best fit for him?
Well, I think it's Baltimore, to be honest with you. I don't even think it's close.
All right, Stephen A. still dealing with some technical difficulties there. We'll work on getting him back. So, Max, we can pick back up with you here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when you're talking about Baltimore, and listen, your point about having a playmaker and a difference maker for Lamar Jackson, the way they've structured their offense, you know, what AB has done so well for so long, even in Pittsburgh before he made the transition, and, you know, with the Raiders and the Patriots and all those kinds of things, is he created separation and routes, and he had that kind of timing with Roethlisberger, right? It was just special. You saw him when he's playing with Tom Brady in New England for, you know, for a blip, cup of coffee, right? But it's special. Russell Wilson has that maturity already, where he knows what to do. Like you said, with Lamar, you're still working on the accuracy of what you're trying to get accomplished. You're still working on those facets of his game. Seattle wants to go make that play, right? They feel like they're a play away. They made the splash with Jamal Adams. I feel like with a 36 years old, 35 year old quarterback, they really want to put all the chips in. Lamar Jackson, 23 years old, you probably have a little more time to develop your team, to develop the receiving core with Lamar. You understand what he's going to be good at, what you want from him. I really feel like from a Seattle perspective, they would want to pursue an Antonio Brown, Antonio Brown more than a Baltimore would.
Yeah, no question. As far as Seattle, their leading receiver, Tyler Lockett, and then it was DK Metcalf. And then for Baltimore, it was actually their tight end, Mark Andrews, and then it was his cousin, Hollywood Brown, Marquise Brown. Jeff, thank you so much for being with us, putting up with those technical difficulties. We appreciate you as always, and we will talk to you soon.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Thank you, Randy. Appreciate you. There he is, Stephen A. We got you back. All right, want you to weigh in on the subject of Antonio Brown. Potentially, Pete Carroll would like him to go to the Seahawks, and we know that Lamar Jackson wants him in Baltimore. You said you think the Ravens are a better fit. Why?
Well, I think the Ravens are a better fit because, number one, we're talking about the prima donna that is Antonio Brown. So what you're talking about is him being in a situation where he has an opportunity to compete for a Super Bowl championship, and there's additional elements of motivation. Well, imagine being in the same division as the team that you demanded to get the hell away from when you were a Pittsburgh Steeler. This is the Pittsburgh Steelers' number one rivalry in the AFC North. So you got to take that into consideration as well. Then you have to look at what Lamar Jackson has had available to him. You got Hollywood Brown. You got Miles Boykin. You've got Nick Boyle as your tight end. You got Mark Ingram as your running back. Now, these brothers can play. Please don't get me wrong. But when we talk about DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett and a stout running attack in Seattle, it pales in comparison. I'm sorry, that, you know what, Baltimore has pales in comparison. Baltimore's offense was
legit because Lamar Jackson rushed for over 1,200 yards as a quarterback. He was the number one rusher on the number one rushing team. That's how electrifying he is in terms of his motor with running the football. Imagine if he had a receiver as elite as Antonio Brown to lean on. You already compromised the secondary because of his running ability and the fact that you can't drop somebody into coverage because you have to constantly make sure there's somebody spying on Lamar Jackson to try and keep him contained. But if Antonio Brown is added to that mix, I think that's what it takes to compete with Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City. And last but not least, if you're Baltimore, you can't take for granted that you can afford to wait because of the youth of Lamar Jackson, because again, with Patrick Mahomes not going anywhere for the foreseeable future because he's relatively young himself and Kansas City is already the reigning defending Super Bowl champions, you got to find a way to offset them sooner than later. Antonio Brown is the thing that could help propel you to that level more so than he would do for you in Seattle.
Well, we do agree that Baltimore could use Antonio Brown on the field even more than Seattle. Obviously, any team could use him on the field. He's one of the best receivers who ever lived. So they could use him more than Seattle, but that's just the problem, Stephen A. Has AB given you any indication that he's not going to eventually be a problem at some point during the season? And then the question becomes, how much does the team need him? Like, how much leverage does he have? He has more in Baltimore than Seattle, where there's less of a veteran presence at the quarterback position than in Seattle, and therefore I actually like him more in Seattle.
All right, I'm driving blindly now because I lost the producer, but I think we're about out of time here. Stephen A., Max, appreciate you guys as always. We'll do it again tomorrow, everybody. Stay safe. Thanks for spending part of your day with us.